Thank you for joining us today for our Lunch with Lou conference call. My name is Ryan Graham, and I'm a financial advisor here at AltEdge. Today, Lou will be discussing the economic outlook, tariffs, and other topics of interest to you. In just a moment, our CEO, Lou Altest, will join us on the call. After Lou's remarks, I will ask him a few selected questions that our clients have submitted. Now, it is my pleasure to present Lou Altest.
Hi. We have a number of issues that we will tackle in this call, and I think it's going to be very interesting for all of you. The call includes, why is the economy doing well, and will it continue to do well? What about inflation? Everyone is afraid of it, but where is it? The importance of the inverted yield curve is another item. Why it can be called the perverted yield curve. I'll explain its importance simply. The potential for a correction in stocks, which is the number one question that people ask. And then we'll go on to the special topics in tariffs. Will a tariff war block the world economy? Next, how is AltEdge positioned for the road ahead? We'll answer your questions and then end with a short remark by Ryan. Let's start with the outlook. The economy is doing well. GDP for second quarter has really picked up. 2% growth has been the norm for about 10 years now. All of a sudden, second quarter looks like it was up, and we're going to get news probably Friday on this. It was up 3 to 5%, a real step up. Why is that happening? Consumers have tax-reduced dollars in their pockets, and they are exchanging the cash for goods. Businesses have loaded up as well, helped by their decline in tax rates. Capital spending is a key factor, and it has stepped up. The only weakness that we could see, and it's only mild weakness, is in the real estate sector. It's only mild except for New York City, which is a little more pronounced. There's particular weakness in New York City. I know that you're more interested in that. Many of you who live close to the city. Above average growth should continue for the rest of 2018. Increasingly, we'll be focusing on 2019. The markets will be. What about next year? It's likely to slow down, but not decline. Year-to-year comparisons won't be helped as they are right now by the 2018 drop in tax rate. In fact, competition may well take away some of the tax benefits. How does competition take it away? Well, with more dollars, there'll be more expansion and more duking it out, and the duking it out can result in lower prices and lower profit margins, although it's early to say that profits have peaked. It's probably not early to say that profit margins, as opposed to absolute profits, have peaked. The stock market is benefiting from higher corporate profits. They're really higher. Notice the emphasis I put on that. The corporations are helped by profit growth in corporate divisions abroad, declines in business taxation coming from the administration's tax policy, and a continued growth in the client expenditures, clients being the consumers. The corporate profits were up 20 to 25% in the first quarter, and for the full year, it's up 20%. Those are really large figures. And you're going to see how important they are, because right now, the market is selling at 16 times projected full year 2018 earnings. That brings it very close to being average, an historical, and in some cases even on par with being average. And you say, how could it be that you've told me, as I have, that corporate profits were not in bubble territory, but they were high, and all of a sudden now you're saying that they are about average? its projected earnings come through? And the answer is this enormous 20 to 25% gain in corporate profits at a time when progress in the marketplace, in the stock market progress, has been relatively, well, flattish, let's call it. So we've had a change in valuation without having a significant drop in price, which is what usually gives you the decline in valuation and makes stocks more reasonable. Here are the concerns going forward. There will always be concerns. Here they are. Inflation. A marked rise in inflation would force interest rates up. If we see a major increase in inflation, then you're going to see interest rates move up very quickly. And that restricts stock market performance. The principal cause would be a labor shortage with wage rates forced higher, creating inflation. There are signs of inflation already. I don't want you to think that there aren't. We've moved above the 2% level in inflation in the country, the one that was the goal, but it's nothing that serious yet. And one of the reasons is people who were formerly retired are re-entering the labor force, creating more supply, which helps to keep labor wage rates moderate. But I'm telling you now, more inflation is coming. We will watch this area very carefully. The second item is called the inverted yield curve. And let me give you a teaser for that. Did you know that virtually every time over the post-World War II period, when near-term interest rates were higher than long-term rates, the stock market hit the skids? Each time, this became a predictor of a recession. And you say, why is this so, and what is long-term rates and short-term rates? Long-term rates are bonds that will be repaid in 10 years or more. They represent longer-term feelings about our economy. Their rates are almost always higher than short-term rates. That is because people prefer bonds that fall due in shorter periods. There is less risk over shorter periods. Most people offered a 4% yield for either 3 years or 10 years in a hypothetical situation, will pick 3 years because in 3 years they'll get their cash back sooner and they will have more comfort in what they do. The unusual case of higher short-term than long-term rates through tightening, usually it has occurred through tightening, and we're having some tightening right now by the Fed, which has switched from easy money policy to tightening, indicates the public's concern that a recession is coming. In a recession, interest rates generally fall. If interest rates fall, what should you do? Well, that's why people buy long-term bonds in anticipation of a recession to lock in higher yields. Let me explain that simply. If you are given a high yield and you expect a recession, if the market has a high yield, and you expect the recession now to occur fairly soon, you know that long-term bonds rates may well come down, or interest rates in general will come down, although they're most pronounced in declines on the short-term end. But if you know rates are going to come down, you want to buy long-term bonds to lock in today's higher than normal rates. Despite the history and my point about a perverted because it's not usual, an inverted yield curve, I don't see it having much effect today. It can make some people think twice about spending, afraid of the recession coming, or investing, but the economy appears strong enough to withstand it. Besides, interest rates are not that close to the inverted upside-down levels now. All right, the last thing that I'll discuss is interest rate rise risk. And we've really discussed it in a way already before we go into the biggie, the one that you're all concerned about, tariffs. The administration's concern with an election coming up has placed its emphasis on outstanding growth now. It has asked the Fed to slow down rate rises, even though they're not supposed to. The administration is supposed to leave the Federal Reserve alone, although the president isn't the first to try to put a little pressure. Usually, right before elections, the president puts in some heat so as to keep rates and the economy at favorable levels for the election. The Federal Reserve, on the other hand's desire is to raise interest rates gradually to prevent a step-up in inflation, the more long-term consideration. The Federal Reserve is independent of the administration. It can do what it wants. However, I suspect that after the current administration's recent remarks, it will now go slower in rate rises than it had intended, perhaps extending that may happen after the pledged interest rate rise ends for, I think there are two more left for this year. The effect may be a decline in the dollar, which would help exports and foster faster growth. However, this rapid growth may over time lead to an even higher interest rate on a truly accelerated pace, which could eventually cause a recession. I wouldn't worry about it now, even if the Fed went slower, but it could have some effect a year or two down the road. Let's talk about tariffs. Obviously, tariffs and the possibility of a trade war are a great concern today. First, some background. As the U.S. became a major power, so did its competitiveness. Its balance of payments, which means the excess of exports from U.S. foreign countries over imports, peaked after World War II. At that time, the U.S. possessed a large portion of gold. I think it had over half the gold in the entire world, which foreigners used and they received because foreigners didn't have much to give the U.S., Europeans in particular, so they gave them gold for purchase of U.S. goods. But as the standard of living climbed in the U.S. and Europe bounced back, and when our wage rates rose, our exports got more expensive, and our balance of payments gradually reversed. We imported more automobiles like BMW, and our competitive exports, such as agriculture, didn't keep up. Currently, we have covered these deficits as we switch to deficits in our balance of trade by foreigners placing investments in the U.S. Also, in effect, the U.S. has historically received some extra credit, I'll call it extra credit, in trade negotiations because it was the military and financial powerhouse and used that benefit to purchase investments around the globe. Obviously, that kind of situation may be at some risk now, but that's another topic. The current administration is attempting to prune the deficits by raising tariffs on a modest number of products and threatening to raise them on many more products. I'm going to tell you about what our major difficulties. It can be separated simply into an industry and a country. The industry is automobiles. We spend so much on automobiles, we have a huge outflow. The days of whatever is good for General Motors is good for the country was a saying many years ago. It's no longer true in that our automobile industry isn't as competitive as we like, and now foreigners control about half of the U.S. market with foreign brands, although some international cars are being manufactured in the country. Two countries are benefiting the most. One is Germany, an auto powerhouse with a quality leader in the world, and Japan, another strong auto competitor, which runs the second largest surplus with the U.S. A foreigner's surplus is, of course, a balance of trade deficit for the U.S. The second problem is a country, and that country is China. It has lower manufacturing costs than the U.S. You all know that. It doesn't always pay fees for use of our products and often requires that we disclose our proprietary technology developments to gain access to their market. Before you get too excited, I must tell you that I've been told that we did the same thing when we were a young country. However, China is no longer a young country in the sense of development. As the country with the second largest GDP, it is no longer entitled to special rights. What can we do about the trade deficit? Additional tariffs or other restrictions on automobile imports, which we already have placed at times in the past. Second is an agreement with China to further open their market to U.S. goods, paying fees for all products consumed without our having to disclose proprietary techniques. This is, in my opinion, is where Trump should concentrate his efforts. Of course, China will have some extra weight with its large holding of U.S. bonds. In effect, they're financing our deficit. That could hurt us if they decided to sell or at least stop purchase of U.S. Treasuries. Nonetheless, given their huge surplus with us, they should have some give on this point. A key question is whether the administration's goal is to obtain better terms in international trade, alternatively just appeal to voters in the U.S., or more seriously for us is to make the U.S. an island unto itself. If the administration just wants to appeal to voters, they can yell and scream for a while and then announce terms that may have already been established that will sound good but do little net to help generate cash inflows for us. If we want to make the U.S., alternatively, an island unto itself, the U.S. will decouple from many treaties, as it has begun to do without thought, and raise tariffs. The short-term benefits will be illusory, as restrictions on imports will enable domestic manufacturers to raise prices, thereby causing inflation and, surprisingly, a decline in the average household's income. Moreover, the government giving financial aid to those hurt by retaliatory countries, such as the billions of new government aid for farmers, which was just released, I think, yesterday, is very costly. We can do that in all the industries that are hurt. Moreover, this U.S.-centered approach, longer term, which substantially reduced the technological edge the U.S. possesses. U.S. withdrawing from treaty negotiations, I think this is very important, could also create a new world order with China and Japan ultimately joined together to replace the U.S. as the international trade kingpin. On the other hand, if the U.S. is reasonable and respects our allies and trade partners, it can gain some extra financial benefits that could help us grow. If it hasn't already done so, the U.S. will be forced to make a choice. The wrong choice going forward, an extensive climb in tariff walls, not just for a short period of time for show, leading to a true trade war, not the almost unimportant tariffs which we have now, which can bring about a significant correction in the stock markets for both U.S. and foreign countries. Clearly, if we're going to have large tariffs, we're all going to lose, and then the stock markets are going to decline worldwide. The rational choice is, of course, a measured deal that will allow the world to continue to grow. By the way, the U.S. deficits as a percentage of the economy have already declined from what it has been 10 years ago, and our own balance of trade is better than it has been 10 years ago as a percentage of GDP. We're still negative, but as a percentage of GDP, it's a reduced percentage. And if government spending, particularly on health care, is kept under control, its deficit may continue to be sustainable without a tax hike. Let's move on to performance. Over the past 6 months, our performance and the markets have been flattish. That's a weighted average of bonds and stocks. The performance of your account over the past 12 months was up 7%. The entire gain in the domestic market, which I believe come after the mid-year, has come largely from large technology. And this year, large technology has done extremely well, namely the FANGs, Facebook, Amazon, Apple, Netflix, Google, a relative outperformance that is not likely to continue for a long period of time. The first 6 months of the 12-month period of the 7% increase reflected strong international and domestic growth. The second 6 months showed significant weakness internationally. Perhaps the greatest reason for the weakness was the rise of the dollar, which automatically resulted in a decline in international returns. Other reasons for weakness include international, particularly developing market concerns over an anticipated rise in U.S. interest rates, which would result in a shift from international to domestic markets. The president's desire to see a weaker dollar could provide international securities strength for the balance of the year should the dollar weakness come into effect, and that would result in a bounce back in foreign performance. So the dollar has a lot to do with relative performance between domestic and international results. Well, what are our plans? At AllFest, we actually reduced our internationally developing market holdings in the first half of the year, anticipating the rate rise. You may have noticed that several holdings were paired. That was not because of dislike of those funds. Paired means reduced. It doesn't mean eliminated. We anticipated the recent correction in our results that helped cushion our results. Since we still view the international outlook favorably, we are considering replacing the foreign position with drawn, depending on market factors. Another plan is we are looking at establishing a further positioning in developing market bonds should their yields continue to rise. We are in the process of realigning client portfolios overall, bringing them closer to client benchmarks and other client weighting. In fewer instances, new funds will be added, a new proportion set, and that's happening principally in accounts with 80% or more in stock and also those with 25 or less in equities.
Thank you, Lou. Now we'll address a few questions that our clients sent in. The first question is, are things looking perilous, as some experts are saying? And if so, what are we doing about it?
As some of you who've come in and heard me say, it is likely that sometime in the next 2 to 3 years, we will have a correction in the markets. I mean, that's a material correction. 10% is not a correction. 20 to 30 is a correction. It will be temporary, much more shallow than 2008, perhaps half the rate of decline, 2008, from peak to 2012. It is often a healthy period for us of reappraisal and provides opportunities for us to find new attractive areas to invest in. Currently, there appears to be no particular prospect that a correction will occur right now.
Next question is, will the European Union hold together?
Europe was making progress over the last decade in becoming the United States of Europe. Within these countries, there were, of course, contra feelings of nationalism. However, acceptance of large amounts of immigrants have been highly unpopular and led to extreme rightist shifts in several countries, which, if it were to continue, could lead to the breakup of the EU. Most recently, the individual countries' politicians seem to understand and are cutting back on immigration. And on the other hand, there have been some particularly promising signs of economic recovery in Greece, Spain, and Ireland. Italy is the country that is the biggest problem right now. The European economy overall has turned up, although recent figures are not as strong as in the rate of turn up as last year.
Relating to this question, will Britain's Brexit create economic problems for the world?
It's likely to cause problems for Britain and a lesser one for Europe should there be a clean break. That is, if Britain has no deal and walks away. Prime Minister May had tried to navigate a central course, and more extreme views prevail on her leftists and rightists. I would not rule out a Brexit 2 citizen vote deciding the outcome. I would really prefer it. A reversal of the original vote, even if couched in mild changes, would be viewed favorably by the stock market.
Changing topics now, what publications did Lou read in the morning?
Boy, you're getting personal here.
Yeah.
I get up 5:30 in the morning. I read the New York Times. I read it last and thoroughly. I read the Wall Street Journal, the Financial Times, which you don't know is the pink paper that you see on the newsstand, the Washington Post, because it's getting to be a significant factor in what's going on, and the New York Post, because I'm human and like to read about the New York Knicks and the Yankees. Then I walk to work 2 miles and think while I'm walking, and put it all in perspective.
Very good. The next question is, do you see blockchain affecting AltFest in the future? And if so, how long until blockchain affects the way AltFest operates?
All right, so I'm going to give you Mayuk, key guy for us, what he's written. Blockchain is an interesting new technology that has the potential to have meaningful impact on how financial transactions are executed and what record keeping is done in the future. However, the technology is still nascent and developing. Our hope will be that in the future this may enable a safer and more robust system for trading and record keeping. While we watch developments in the field, we do not see any immediate impact on how we conduct business. On the investment side, we may take positions in some firms involved in the development of the technology as and when we find them attractive. Some of the bigger technology firms, such as IBM and Microsoft, for example, conduct research in this area, as do some of the big banks.
Next question is, what precautions are built into AltFest's policies and procedures to prevent investing in funds that look legitimate but are not?
I don't know. I think this is a relatively safe area. Anything can happen anywhere. First of all, there's an independent, legitimate board of directors in most companies. The SEC is all over mutual funds. We talk to these people directly whenever we can, which is often, by having them come in and we speak face-to-face with them. And here's a key factor. Most don't handle the books or the money. They just do the buying and selling. That is an important safety factor.
One of our last topics of the day. Do you still favor value stocks over growth stocks? And what are the value and growth percentages in the AltFest Stock Initiative portfolio?
Yes, we still favor value over growth stocks. We have relatively few highly priced in favor growth stocks, not our style. Those that are there for particular reasons, like biotech, which can be higher price, but relative to their existing higher prices in the past, aren't as high priced. So anyway, these are mostly the stock initiatives. However, we have a number of what we call growth at a reasonable price stocks and funds. These are growth funds that are not selling for the way out multiple. And in mutual funds, like a T. Rowe Price has growthier stocks, but they always take into account value in the sense that they will not buy high PE ones. So they're buying growth at a reasonable price. The firm overall is value-based, but fairly close to the blend category, indicating a diversified mixture of value and growth at a reasonable price. It has enabled us to perform well despite value's weakness, which is likely at some point to become a strength.
Thank you, Lou. Before we end the call, I wanted to share a quick and exciting announcement with you all. While some of you may be aware, we are introducing a new private client website which will make the data gathering process far easier on both ends. You can view this as your digital financial manager, as you will have the ability to aggregate your investment accounts and bank accounts so that you can easily see everything you have in one place, link your debit and credit cards to view helpful information, including your level of spending, and to set alerts for such items as a weekly financial summary, low cash balances, and bills due, and also securely upload documents with us, such as your tax returns, insurance policies, and wills, into your own private vault, and you can share these with us at any time at your discretion. This will all be linked back to our financial planning software so that you can easily monitor your progress towards short-term and long-term goals. Please keep an eye out for more communication on this or speak with your advisor if you'd like to learn more about this option. Well, thank you, Lou, and thanks to everyone for listening and sending us your questions today. And, of course, if you have any more personal questions, please contact one of the members of your wealth management team. Our phone number is 212-406-0850. Once again, thank you for joining Lunch with Lou, and have a nice day.